Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We have on the phone our first guest for today, David. We've got John Young, who is has got a show on at Bunjil Place. The show's called Diaspora Psyche. Now, welcome to the program, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. I was just going to say that the funny thing about COVID, you guys were mentioning something about COVID. I just had my jab yesterday, and I was expecting today to be a completely catatonic day, but I'm perfectly fine.
Oh, and I'm so glad, because we're looking forward to talking to you, John. It would be a bit hard talking to you when you're catatonic.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've had both my jabs, and I did not have any... any sort of side effects, so bit disappointed because I was expecting something.
I know, I felt the same as well. I thought, have I missed out on something? Because I'm the same. I've had both mine and nothing. I had some friends who were a little bit out for the count for a couple of days. You know, just like flu-like sort of symptoms run down. Yeah. But I had nothing of that.
So if I declined into absolutely no, making no sense at all. You probably think that the COVID jab is actually taking its toll.
We were just talking about this earlier, John. I think our sort of brains are slightly going to mush because I seem to be forgetting these, David. Yeah. I'm preparing for the show, and David's saying, "Did you know you could do this?" And I thought, "Yeah, I did know that, but how come I forgot now?" You know, so all these little things that we just forget
the tech stuff on the. But the fact is, we've just moved into new studios, and it's still learning all the programs and all the. Dials and buttons that we've got to push.
That's all right. It's all part of learning and moving on, isn't it? So that we're all there. Now, John, back to you. Now it is about you, not about the pro. You know, the technical equipment or us. Now, John, we were before. We just want to have. Get a bit of background on you. Now you've got, obviously you're at Bunjil Place at the moment. The show is called Diaspora. We'll talk about that shortly. But how did you get involved in the arts? And you know, where did your love for the arts come about?
Oh gosh, you know, it's really ancient history. But the thing is that I'm originally from Hong Kong. You know, the then British colony of Hong Kong, and I came out here many, many moons ago at the age of 11.
Oh, okay. And, why did the family move? Was there any particular reason?
No, it wasn't a family at all. It was just me. I came out by myself to boarding school.
Oh.
And so, yes.
And never went home?
Never went home. No, I love Australia.
Well, we're glad you're here. We're glad you're here. And especially, John, with all the trouble that's going on in Hong Kong right now, are your parents still alive? Yeah, you know, what's the situation with them?
No, they're gone. They're gone. And I still have relatives there.
Yeah.
Sort of asking them, you know, it's probably time to move.
But, yes, yeah. You know?
Yeah. But in those days, it was a pretty nice place, you know. But I did come out here because there were riots in those days as well. And I came out and you know, my English wasn't so good at that point, and probably still not that good, but at the same time, I felt, well, maybe the way to actually, you know, communicate to people was through my drawings.
Mm.
And so I you know, I had a particular love for painting, and so I looked up a phone book. In those days, there were phone books.
Those old things. Historic. They go back with the dinosaurs, pages. Don't they?
I think they hold a few of those in the archive somewhere, you know.
Yeah, and so I looked at artists, and I found this Russian artist by the name of Peter Panov. And I went, I rang him up, and I said, can I learn how to paint with you?
Oh.
And he said, oh, yes, of course, you know. Just come over, and he was so old. When I went over there, he had piercing blue eyes with a beret.
Yeah.
Very short then. And, you know, when I when I, he was so old that he was actually a real impressionist from St. Petersburg.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, goes,
wow.
Like, but I learned a lot from him. I learned everything about color, and I learned, you know. So that was the beginning.
John, that is an amazing story. How old were you when you rang him and found him?
I was 12.
Wow.
And then because of that, I did a particular drawing of a footballer. One of my classmates told me, draw a football. I was in Sydney, so I had to be a rugby football player. Called Billy Smith being tackled by a Balmain Tiger. And I won the art prize.
Oh, fantastic.
And the art prize was given to me by, you guys might have heard of him, maybe not, a guy called Rex Mossop.
Yes, I have.
And, and Rex gave me a football. That was my first art prize.
Oh, my God. Welcome to Australia, you thought, didn't you?
although rugby would have been played in Hong Kong, I suppose, wouldn't it?
It probably was at that stage. I didn't know anything about it. But anyway, you know, that rugby got me into the art world.
Okay, basically. Fantastic. And so did you go on and study art?
I did. I actually got a scholarship to go to the then National Art School, which I didn't go to. And then I went to Sydney Uni first. Sort of had to learn a little bit about, you know, the history of art and things like that.
Oh, okay.
And then I went to art school. And then I went to art school. And then after art school, worked in a factory.
Right.
And then,
okay.
Saved enough, and I got a scholarship to go to Paris.
Hello. But just going back a little bit, you know, like doing the history of art at uni and stuff. Did your parents go, hold on, maybe not the right area we wanted you to go? They were fine?
Well, I was fearing the fact that they were going to give me the age of 3, which is, you know, doctor, lawyer, dentist.
Yeah, yeah.
But they never did.
Oh.
They never did.
Fantastic.
They just kept their mouths shut and let me do what I wanted to do.
Oh, good on you.
Which was astounding.
Yeah. How did you land this scholarship in Paris?
Because in uni, actually had a thing called a Power Foundation Scholarship, and so basically, you know, you apply, and then I saved up enough to go to London and live in the bedsit. And whilst I was living in the bedsit, I got this letter to say that you've got this scholarship and you can stay in Paris for 2 years.
Whoa!
And I thought, wow.
And you thought this art thing's a good gig, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was the beginning, and then I came back and I just thought. You know, I came back and I started teaching part-time at art school, but I thought, it was Australia really the place to you know, have my artistic practice because, you know, it's a small artistic art world here.
Yeah.
And so whilst I was in overseas, I actually also went to New York and I looked up, in the same way as I looked up a phone book of my first impressionist teacher, I looked up a guy called Namjoon Paik, who's the first avant-garde sort of video artist
in
the world. And I looked him up, and I rang him, and I said, you know, can I come and talk to you? And he said, oh, yeah, sure. You know, he's a good friend of John Cage, who's also, you know, an avant-garde artist that point. And Namjoon said to me, I asked him, you know, should I come to New York? And he said, no, don't come to New York. I thought, why am I really that bad? You know? And he said, no, it's because in the future, wherever you are, everybody will know about you anyway because of the technology.
Ah.
So this was 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah,
yeah. You know? So I followed his heed. And here I am still in Australia.
Right. Okay. So, but how did you go though, John? You're like, you were aiming to, you know, like, I love the way you look up people in the telephone book and off you go. Who did you learn off of, or did you have to develop your own styles, or were you looking over to see what was happening around the world, and as the internet got better, that you would have been able to see more?
Yeah, I think, you know, most Australians, we're the biggest travellers in the world, so we do look around, you know, and I, this is one of the things that I really believe, is that Australians wherever you go, I'm sure this is your experience too, wherever you go, there's always a bloody Australian there before you.
Yes.
You can never go to somewhere where it's undiscovered, don't you think?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Or if it's not an Australian, there's a New Zealander. Yeah, or there's already an Australian and a New Zealander both there.
Yes. So I think that just through travel and through being conscious of, things that are happening around in the world, that wasn't so hard at all to find out what was going on.
Yeah, fantastic. So how did you then hone in on what you're doing, your practice? What was it? Where was that defining moment where you go, this is it. I know what I want to do.
I think I painted a lot and then I destroyed a lot of my work.
Why?
Because I wasn't happy with it.
Oh, okay.
Because I wasn't happy with it.
Yeah.
And then one day I struck upon a work which I painted called First, and I suddenly realized, oh my goodness, there's something in this.
Yeah.
And I think these moments, there's really transparent moments that you can see everything makes sense through the work and in your own life.
Yeah.
And I think that those are moments that, that they're so rewarding that you just think, I've got to find another moment like this somewhere down the track. And I must say, I've only found about 3 or 4 moments like that in my life, where you do something, you paint something or whatever,
yeah.
and it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So that's what propelled me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk about this exhibition you've got running. So tell us, tell our listeners what is it all about.
Well, it's called Diaspora Psyche,
yep.
And as you know, the word diaspora is about, the sprinkling of people around the world from different ethnic groups. So people here could be from the Irish diaspora, or they could be the Chinese diaspora, or the Jewish diaspora, or whatever. And psyche, the word, is, of course, the spirit and the mind. And basically, it's really dealing with what goes on in people's heads, before they left their home country, during the passage here, if you're a boat person. And when you arrive, how do you deal with the circumstance in Australia. Mm. And so basically this sort of idea I've already had right throughout my work, which were pretty much dealing with bicultural or transcultural sort of issues. And so as a result of 20, 30 years work, I was approached also by Bunjil Place, a fantastic curators, Penny Teal and Georgia Cribb, and they asked me to do a show, to have a look at as a survey, to have a look at the different projects that I've done in relationship to this issue. And so that was the beginning, I guess, maybe, 4 years ago or something like that when they invited me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how have you presented it?
It's a series of projects. And when I say projects, most of them are large groups of drawings they're not really on paper, they're on blackboard in a sense, blackboard on paint on paper with chalk.
Okay.
And then photographic works, and then there are large paintings. And because all these projects, I start with a group of very large group of drawings, maybe 60 drawings or something like that. And all these different projects have different stories to them. So there are about 3 large banks of these drawings which are dealing with different narratives, of people that are migrating or diaspora. Very fascinating stories. We went, so that's how it started in a way.
There is actually a whole range of events actually happening at Bunjil Place, and these, the specific ones have been inspired by your pieces of work. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I mean, I talk to a lot of younger artists.
Yep.
And there are dancers, there's just a groundswell of sort of people from particularly from the Asian diasporas, that actually, you know, are or Eurasians that are just about to start in the cultural world. You know, I mean, when I started, there weren't so many people in the cultural world, but now there's, you know, people extremely competent in doing work, and I've invited some of them to actually, you know, have a dance, sort of like in that situation, and also I've also invited other younger sort of sculptors or installation artists, James Nguyen and Sangeeta, to actually, you know, have discussions in relationship to what their relationship to the diaspora is about, mainly in relationship to memory, really, the idea of, you know, what happens with people's memories, which now, is very real with move places.
Now, it all the name of the I suppose the I don't know, it's very hard to call it an exhibition because it's a range of events, but the diaspora psyche, what I mean talking about it, you're obviously talking about the Asian experience, you know, of migrants in Australia, but what is that the theme that you're trying to get across? I mean, are you trying to understand how people fit in, how, you know, I suppose people are fitted into society, I'm trying to learn
different people of different diasporas, how, what kind of values they carried when they came here, and,
okay,
you know, and what kind of mindset they were in. And so by the end of all these history projects that I did, of 14 years of it, we researched, I've honed in on the Chinese diaspora and Chinese in Australia, and ended up doing the first visual history of the Chinese people in Australia, you know, through all these different projects that I've done.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, there are fantastic stories. They're brilliant, brilliant stories. Can I tell you one of them?
Sure.
In diaspora psyche, yeah. One of them is I'm sure a lot of you, sort of, people in, you know, Ballarat or whatever, and Bendigo has heard of this walk that the Chinese miners did.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Yeah, it's from Robe, which is a 300K walk.
In South Australia, yeah.
Yes. And so on the way, walking from South Australia to Ballarat and Bendigo, they discovered places like Ararat and so on and so forth. But that was one walk. But there's actually another walk which is absolutely remarkable that these gold miners did, because they weren't allowed to go into Queensland without any, you know, paying any tax. So they landed in Darwin, and then they walked from Darwin down to Tennant Creek, which is pretty close to Alice Springs. And then when they got there, they were told to turn left and walk towards the rising sun until you hit water, which is pretty much near Cairns. So it was like a 2,000-kilometer
walk. Whoa, how long did it take them?
Oh, well, it took them ages. I mean, you know, months. But the thing is that a lot of them didn't make it.
Of course.
They stopped halfway.
Yeah.
And stayed in the border between, you know, sort of Northern Territories and Queensland.
Yeah.
And married, you know, sort of Aboriginal women, and produced half Chinese, half Aboriginal kids.
Yeah. Well, so, we actually had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, and she's part Asian, part and she now lives here in Melbourne, and you know, like they got real ties with up there, and as a matter of fact, I've got a nephew that lives in Cairns, and above Cairns is Cooktown, and became a you know, like there's a lot of Chinese burial areas there, you know, as in where they were buried. And because there was a gold rush there as well.
Mm. Yeah, so Palmer River was the place in Queensland where tried to go to in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there were all these absolutely remarkable stories that the Chinese, you know, during the sort of early 20th century and the 19th century, remarkable stories that I committed myself to doing for about 10 years, really, with all these projects, and now I'm sort of almost at the end of it.
Fantastic. And so that's what you will see in this exhibition? You know, like you get that sense of all of this?
Yeah, it's sort of my take on it, I guess. Yeah,
of course, yes.
And sort of, whilst it's not so much my expression of it, more than it is seeing my process of learning about all these, what people said.
Yeah, you know, and John, there would be, and you know, like the more people you talk to, the more stories you'll get to find out about.
Indeed, yeah.
You should actually, if you can, meet up. Her name is Jenna Lee.
Right.
And she's just been, she's now on the board of Craft Victoria. So you know, like she's really kicking goals there. So absolutely fascinating what you're doing here. And a lot of the talks you've been doing are almost over now, aren't they?
Oh, well, they were meant to be almost over, but in fact...
Oh, of course. Of course.
Things have changed, David, remember?
Oh, God, COVID brain, I forgot that you obviously haven't done any of them.
I feel like as if I'm in a sci-fi movie, I'm moving back and forwards in time, you know?
So are you doing them online, or what's happening now?
No, I think that we will try to do it, well, you know... hopefully without more lockdowns, which is very precarious.
Well, yeah, good luck.
We will try to do it. So, yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, but go and check out the exhibition anyway. And when does the actual exhibition... again, we can't probably go to the exhibition.
No.
But we'll be able to see it online. When's it due to finish, John?
It's due to finish on September 12th. Yep. And there is a discussion and a sort of little... panel discussion with these younger artists on September 11th. There you go. And I was meant to be giving an artist talk in situ there on the 22nd. So I think you can still go after the lockdown. It's just, I think it's limited to, you know...
people going through. And you have to book as well. Yeah, you have to book.
Yeah.
It's like
most things, they book online, I think, you know. And
Yeah, because in the first 2 weeks that opened, we had 2,500 people turning up.
Whoa!
So,
whoa!
Yeah, so it was very good. Excellent. On that level. But, yeah.
Yeah, well, fascinating stuff that you're doing. And hopefully people can get to see it before... it has to move on because the next exhibition might show up there. But John, thank you for talking to us. And what you're doing is really very, very exciting.
And I suppose for our listeners, John, it's just a matter of going to the Bunjil Place website and then just keeping up with all, I suppose, any changes or adjustments to the times and of the events that were scheduled for this month. Okay, so thanks so much for talking to us, John. We've been talking here on Joy 94.9, John Young, and our listeners, just check out Bunjil Place. I think there's a website, and I think at the moment now, it hasn't updated. I think it's got all the August dates, but I'm sure that they'll update that at some point.
Yeah.
All right, you're here on Joy 94.9.
Okay.
So, thanks very much, John. Cheers.
Thank you.
On Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.